Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I heard a lot of talk today by Julian Brisebois about playing hurt, and I'm not playing as hurt as those guys, but I threw my back out trying to lip something today. So if I stammer around more than usual, that's why. I'm in serious pain.
I might get a little teary-eyed here because you're really inspiring me, like Julian Brisebois was today at his press conference.
Was he teary? Was he wiping tears away?
Not tears. He got a little choked up.
Yeah.
He said, you know, part of it's he's got a cold, but the other part is these guys inspire
he's
him.
He's got cold.
Look, he's talking about Alex Killorn, who breaks his fibula, clean breaks in two places.
Stupid.
On a Monday. By Thursday, he gets a rod in his leg and tries to skate on Saturday.
That's, I mean, there's valor and then there's stupidity. Yeah. I don't know whether to feel good or bad about that decision.
Well, he goes, that's what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. I mean, he talked about, Victor Hedman's had a torn meniscus since March 30th.
Now that one we suspected that something was wrong.
Yep.
You wouldn't think something that bad was wrong. I've had a torn meniscus, and I don't know the severity of the one that, obviously that he has, but let me just assure you, how you could skate and play hockey without just having an incredible pain tolerance, because, you know, those things, that cartilage will erupt, will kind of shatter, and you have shards that go into the tissue around the knee, and it hurts all the time. And when you're to skate and play hockey with a torn meniscus that's really something. I mean, and I'm sure there was, swelling involved, and who knows what he had to do to get ready to play every week. That's pretty impressive, right, by itself.
Mm-hmm. Nikita Kucherov, of course, comes back from hip surgery. Who knows if his hip felt 100%?
Yeah, no one even addressed that.
But he has a non-displaced rib fracture.
Ugh.
That from the hit from in the Islander series, the cross-check. He would have to get treatment before every game, nerve deadening, but shots. The doctor who would do it was on vacation for part of it, would fly back to Tampa to give Cooch the treatment and go back to his family vacation out of state.
Wow.
Kucherov even came back between games 3 and 4 for the treatment, which they were in Montreal, and he plays with that. We learned that Ryan McDonagh and Barclay Goodrow had broken hands.
Both of them had broken hands, and I assume that's from probably, well, could be a lot of things.
Goodrow, we think, was a fight.
Block shot?
Goodrow, we think, was a fight because he missed the last game or two of the regular season. He got in a fight the game before.
Okay.
And he missed the last game or two. Then he missed the first few games of the Stanley Cup, the playoffs against Florida, if you remember.
Yeah.
And when he came back, it must have been, okay, it's healthy enough at least now for me to go. But still a broken hand. I mean, it wasn't healed yet. And Ryan McDonagh also had a broken hand. Victor Hedman, by the way, had surgery on Tuesday. For the meniscus.
That's how bad it was bothering him. I mean,
Brisebois also said some players had some banged up shoulders and some other things, but
those were the highlights or the
lowlights. As they said, that's what it takes to win a Stanley Cup. And we learned that the Stanley Cup is out a few days with an upper body injury.
one of
the players apparently dropped it when showing it off to the fans.
Nice.
Julian said he didn't see it firsthand, but it'll be get repaired this weekend and then starts a tour this weekend.
Yeah, Flat Stanley was not looking good at the end of that parade, I can tell you that. He survived the boat parade part of it, but then I guess they were engaging with the fans and it must have hit the concrete or something, got flattened out. Well, look, it makes their effort even more, sort of epic and Herculean and, one for the ages, because those guys – I mean, I think the story will always kind of start with Cooch and the fact that, he sat out the whole regular season and then played as great as he did and got hurt again and played through that with a cracked rib. And then, of course, I mean, what Killorn attempted to do is doesn't even seem possible. But that's the mentality. He's right. I mean, that those guys really wanted to win together. They wanted to win it again, and they were able to do so. And now, you know, they're limping home with their battle wounds and their scars. But you know what? Their name's engraved on that cup again. And what do they say? They'll walk together forever?
They will, as back-to-back champions, like, which doesn't happen very often.
Yeah,
so.
Which does not happen very often at all. Yeah. No.
And Julian Breeze also talked about, look, he thinks this core and this team, you know, can compete for another Stanley Cup next year.
Yeah.
And you know, he's got a lot of tough decisions to make over the next week or so. The expansion draft being a week from today in Seattle. Names have to be, your list of who you're protecting has to be submitted this weekend. Of course, he also said he's talking to Seattle and possibly a side deal gets done to make sure Seattle takes someone you want instead of somebody you don't. But he's also, you know, he was asked about signing guys like Goodrow and Coleman. He says, look, to sign unrestricted free agents, I got to clear some cap space because I'm over the cap now.
Well, and he made this point, too, that those guys have earned a big salary by the way they've played. And, you know, whether he can pay it or not is debatable. But, you know, you don't begrudge. They've played so well. They've played themselves into this situation, and they deserve to get paid.
Absolutely they do. And they're going to get more. Whether the Lightning can afford to pay them more,
that's the question.
It depends on the moves that Julian Breezeball can negotiate over the next week and a half. Free agency will start in 2 weeks on the 28th. With the NHL draft in the middle of that next weekend.
There's no hometown discounts in pro sports, or so they say. But, you know, Shaq Barrett was on NFL Network, and they asked him, the rumor was you left a lot of money on the table, you know, to return to Tampa. And he said, you know, I don't know. The fact of the matter is, it's possible I did, and he got like $72 million for 4 years. But he says it's possible I did, but the fact of the matter is this is where I wanted to be. Now, had he wanted to cast a wider net, you know, and leverage another team out there against the Bucks, he certainly could have done that. I don't think it's unrealistic to think he could have made more money. But this is where, and, you know, guys like Coleman and them will have to decide on this, but this is where playing for a good organization and enjoying where you live and enjoying your teammates and your coaching staff, and Barrett mentioned all of that. He said, look, I got the best coaching staff. These are the guys I want to, you know, I want to play for. I wanted security. He got that. He could have gotten in another city too, but he wants to win, and he knows that his success came here under Todd Bowles' system, playing next to Vita Vea, playing next to or opposite JPP. You know, all those things matter to him, and so, you know, he didn't seem that upset even with the likelihood that he lost some money in the deal. So, you know, possibly you could see a situation where if it's close, I'm not talking guys aren't going to leave, you know, $10 million on the table. But if it's close, they may decide to stay here because there is so much going for this organization. And they will be contenders again. I just their core alone and their goaltender makes them perennial contenders for playoffs. And then once you get there, Steve, I mean, we know anything can happen.
Well, there's a history in this organization of taking – less than you could get on the open market to stay here.
Yeah.
It started with Steven Stamkos 5 years ago.
Yeah.
When he signed for, what, $8.5 million for an 8-year deal.
Oh, God. You know what he could have gotten in Toronto?
Absolutely. Nikita Kucherov signed for $9.5 million. He could have got more. Victor Hedman signed for $7-8 million approximately. Yeah. You know, all these guys have taken. Now, no taxes here helps.
Absolutely.
You know, you go to Canada and your tax rate's humongous. You go to California, it's different. It's
cost of living is not as much. You know,
absolutely.
We always say they pay you in sunshine here in Florida.
You know, your season's during the winter. You get to live someplace that is nice in the winter instead of, you know, frozen and you can't go outside. And, you know, these guys,
guys
off season in the summer can go, you know, north and you know, a lot of them go up north for the summer when it's the, you know, the worst temperature here wise.
They can be here in December, and if they have an off day at home, they can play golf.
Absolutely.
What hockey player can do that? You got to be in a warm weather city to do it.
So if you know someone like Coleman and Goodrow, if the Lightning want to have them back and they want to be back, I mean, you know, they have the right to take a little less than maybe they would get on the open market to stay here, and they may do that. They may not.
They may.
I mean, You know, Blake Coleman's from Texas. Maybe he wants to go play for the Dallas Stars, and they have an interest.
I mean, sure.
You
sure.
never know. And they've earned that right to make that decision, whether it's to yeah. stay here and you know, what kind of deal they can get here compared to somewhere else. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks here for the Lightning, because they do have to shed some payroll just to get under the cap
mm-hmm.
For next year. And then if they want to try to re-sign some guys, then you got to shed even more. And then, you know, who Seattle will take in the expansion draft. And so it's going to be a news-filled couple of weeks here for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Do you think there's any strategy to what players they expose to that draft? In other words, could there be somebody, like you mentioned, the trade possibility, so mm-hmm. they more or less agree that this is the guy and you are going to take him? I mean, we saw Tyler Johnson, you know, mm-hmm. go on waivers a couple times, right? He was yep. out there. No one picked. So you have to, you could, I mean, I thought Johnson was terrific in the playoffs.
Well, there's a few things. So 30 teams have to expose players to Seattle. Vegas is exempt because they just did this three years ago.
Their draft, yeah.
So Seattle has to, and I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they have to take, I think it's at least 14 forwards, 9 defensemen, and 3 goalies.
Okay.
And that leaves 4 other players. They can pick whatever position they want. So they can take mm-hmm. 18 forwards if they want, mm-hmm. or you know, 5 goalies, et cetera.
Right.
So, you know, they have a certain, and they have to get to a certain salary that they draft too. So you can't just take all rookies that are making, yeah. you know, a million or less amount of money.
You've got to
take a couple bigger contracts. Now, Vegas was smart, and the big contracts they took were 1 year, had 1 year left on them. For instance, the Lightning did a side deal with them, and I don't remember the particulars, but a draft pick was sent to Vegas as well for them to take Jason Garrison because the Lightning wanted to clear him off the cap.
Mm-hmm.
Garrison had 1 year left on his deal. So while it was a $3 or $4 or $5 million hit for Vegas, they had to get to a certain salary anyway. After 1 year, they didn't have to worry about him anymore. They weren't mm-hmm. taking guys that had 3 and 4 years left on their deals with a lot of money on it. For instance, Tyler Johnson has got 3 years left at $5 million. Is Seattle interested in a deal like that? Now, some of it depends on, you know, Jason Garrison was near the end of his career at that point.
Yeah.
You didn't want a long-term deal. Tyler Johnson is still a very productive forward. We saw it in the playoffs. He played extremely well. You put him in the right situation, he could be great. But are you willing to take 3 years of that at $5 million?
At $15 million total, yeah.
Andre Palat has 1 year left on his deal at $5.2 or $5.3 million. You know, if you had a choice of one of those two, if you're Seattle, you might want to take Palat. Maybe you like Palat better, but even if the... In 1 year, I can do whatever I want, re-sign him. I could go a different direction. You're not locked into long-term deals, which gives you a lot more flexibility after year one. So it'll be interesting what Seattle does. Now, teams have a choice. You can either protect 4 forwards, 4 defensemen, and a goalie, or 7 forwards, 3 defensemen, and a goalie.
Hmm.
So what did the Lightning do? And it's a conundrum for the Lightning because they have 4 defensemen you'd probably like to protect. You'd like to Hedman. You have to protect. He's got a no move clause, so he has to be protected. You've got Sergachev, Chernak, and McDonough. If you go with this, but if you only go 4 if you want to protect all 4 defensemen, that means you only get to protect 4 forwards, 2 of which have to be Kucherov and Stamkos.
Mm.
Your other 2 are probably Point and Cirelli. Which means if you're going to protect McDonough or Chernak, assuming Sergachev is going to be protected, if you want to protect both, you know, all 4 of your defensemen, you only get to protect 4 forwards. So it's what, Point, Cooch, Stamkos, and Cirelli, probably. Which means Palat, Killorn, Johnson, Gord, Coleman, or Coleman's a free agent, Colton, Matthew Joseph, all those guys are left exposed.
Yeah, I'm not letting Colton go.
Well, and so then you want to go 7-3, but which defenseman do you leave out there?
Yeah.
I mean, you can make an argument McDonough was...
He was one of their best players.
Maybe the best player in the playoffs this year for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But he's older.
He is, and he's got, you know, he's 31, I think, 32.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got 3 or 4 years left at $6.7 million.
And you've won 2 Stanley Cups with him. But, yeah, he's really, really good, though. I mean, that's not a guy you want to part with.
Right.
But
now, the other options you have, too, is, and the deadline was Tuesday at 5 o'clock to ask players, you could ask Steven Stamkos to waive his no-move clause for the expansion draft. and with the assumption that they wouldn't take him.
With his salary, with
3 years left on his deal at $8.5 million. Yeah.
That's what I meant by strategic.
And it gives you another person to protect. The Minnesota Wild today bought out two players. They bought out Zach Parise and Suter. So there's some massive cap hits down the road for them on this. And those players are going to get paid for, I think they had 3 or 4 years left on their deals. They're going to pay for another 8 years. This is what the Lightning did with Vinny LeCavalier a few years ago. But they did that now so that those are two guys they don't have to protect. They had full no-move clauses. They had to protect them in the expansion draft. Mm. So by buying them out, they don't have to protect those two players. It gives them two other guys they can protect in the expansion draft. So it's
that would be pretty shrewd if they put Stamkos out there.
You could ask him to waive his no-moves. He doesn't have to agree to it.
No, I realize that. And I don't know that he would unless he was 100% certain. I mean, if it could help his team and he knew that Seattle wasn't going to take him.
Yeah. Now, the other option is you create a deal with Seattle and say, hey, say they want Andre Palat. I'm just making it, you say, okay, we'll give you Andre Palat.
But you have to take so-and-so.
You take Tyler Johnson or we'll throw in a draft. You know, if you want Palat, fine, take someone else. Or you just create a deal, say, hey, we'll throw in a second-round draft pick next year. Mm-hmm. And we want you to take
so-and-so.
Mitchell Stevens or Matthew Joseph
one of the guys we're willing to part with.
Or maybe we want you to take Tyler Johnson because we need to clear that cap space.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a second-round draft pick next year. You take Tyler Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that helps us clear a cap space. So you can make that deal, and then you don't have to worry about who you're protecting and who you're not. Because once you make that, if you make a deal with them, then you're done.
That counts, yeah.
Right. If also, free agency doesn't start till July 28th. There's a 48-hour window, I believe, next Monday, Tuesday. I think those are the dates. If they sign a free agent, for instance, let's say Seattle signs Barclay Goodrow to a deal, and he agrees to a free agent contract with them, the Lightning no longer have to worry about the expansion draft because he was a free agent from their team. Now, that means Barclay Goodrow didn't test free agency outside of Seattle.
Right. And that gets back to do they agree what his value is? Is he willing to take less, or does he want to see what's on behind door number one?
I don't think a lot of those deals happen because if your player wants to go to free agent, unless they really want to play for Seattle, there's a coach, a reason,
family,
whatever,
they're from there,
or they just make an obscene offer,
right?
You know, hey, this is more than I think I'm going to get anywhere else. Let me go ahead and take it, but the player has that option. And it's before they can test free agency. So Barclay Goodrow couldn't talk to any other team yet outside the Lightning. So not likely that stuff happens. But if they do happen to sign one, then... And that's what $650 million entry fee into the league gets you.
Well, it's fascinating. Yeah, exactly. It got Vegas to the Stanley Cup Final in their first year, by the way. It's not the way they did it back in the day with the NFL, I can tell you. Take a look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1976.
Oh, Phil, just ask Phil Esposito about the Lightning's expansion.
Oh, God.
You know, I mean, I think players got to protect like 12 forwards and 3 goalies.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, you were getting nobody.
Exactly. And you'll like it, and you'll be happy.
Yeah.
It's totally changed. But like you said, that comes with the price of getting in to all those owners.
But the other part is that entry fee of $650 million. Doesn't go towards the cap or anything. That goes straight to the owners.
To the pockets, yeah.
That's not revenue for the league. It's not. It's split between the owners. And
absolutely.
It goes to their pockets. They don't have to give 48 or 50% to the players.
To the players.
It's pure profit, which is why you get a good player.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're happy to do it. Everything has a price. But, well, it's going to be fascinating. I mean, I'm really interested to see how that all pans out. And however it goes, I think you have to trust Julian and the moves that he's made to bring him 2 Stanley Cups already. No one understands what it takes to win or the talent that they have or the young guys in the organization. You know, there's a whole bunch of winners, in the AHL that will be up here in the next year or two as well. I mean, that's the beauty of this organization. They keep finding and developing great players, and they're not afraid to bring them up. So, that's also the strength of the franchise. So we'll see. Now we got some mailbag questions. I don't know how many we'll get to now. If we don't, we'll get to some more the other day. But let's get started.
All right, Craig. We'll lead off with Craig from Vegas, and he asked, is John Cooper now on the top of the Mount Rushmore of Tampa coaches? Did he overtake Chucky, Torts, Dungy, Madden, Cash, McKay?
What a great question. It's an outstanding question. Look, he's the only one that has two championships, so he's got that over the rest of them. And really,
three finals appearance.
And three, yeah, he's going to say.
What,
it really,
five semifinals?
Yeah. So, I mean, he has systematically, annually exceeded anything those other coaches have done. So I think just from a pure resume standpoint, he is above them. Now, I would say to you, okay, that if you look at where the Lightning was when he took over as an organization, an ownership, what their history was. I mean, Guy Boucher had been to an Eastern Conference final just, what, a year before or 2 years before?
2 years, yeah.
So it wasn't like, you know, he was coming in with a cupboards bare. He was not. And he was very familiar with the players that he had coached, you know, in the AHL. So, you know, and you get this all the time, right? Is it talent? Is it coaching? Should the coaches that have talent be penalized? No. You know, look, Tony Dungy walked into a situation where they had double-digit losses for 12 straight seasons. However, from a talent standpoint, they had drafted Warren Sapp. They had drafted Derek Brooks. They had drafted John Lynch. Now, all those guys were there, and they were part of the 12, or you know, the 12 double-digit losing seasons. But it wasn't like there was no talent when he showed up in Tampa. There was no quarterback per se, and you know, and then Gruden had to take that after Dungy left after 6 years, and then take it a step further. But then you could say, well, John walked into a situation with one of the top defenses in the league. They had been to a championship game already. They were ready to win. You know, it was Dungy's team. You hear all that stuff. So there's asterisks by everybody. I think, for me, I still say the most incredible coaching job that I've seen is Joe Maddon. And I say it from the standpoint that, and I give all the credit to the ownership, to the front office, all of that. But that's a franchise that was a doormat and was going to stay a doormat and was losing 100 games a year. Now, the ownership was everything. And the people they brought in to run the front office, the acceptance of the analytics and all of that, right? But in baseball, where there's no salary cap or very little salary cap without penalties, and you're going in that division and you go to a World Series – in 2008, I know they didn't win. So, you know, championship versus no championship, I get it. But just in terms of the job that was done, I think Maddon and or Dungy are very close to Cooper, right below him. And I'm not going to discount what Chucky did. Chucky brought home the title, right? Dungy couldn't do it. But I think you have to look at it each situation separately. But there's no question that Cooper stands on top of those guys in terms of achievement. And really, how else are you judging a coach?
Well, let me add this in, because I agree with everything you said. But I think we forget one side of John Cooper, is that the culture transformation of this franchise happened when Vinnick took over and Iserman and all
yes.
that.
Yes.
But remember, Cooper was at the AHL coaching and winning a championship in Norfolk.
Yep.
With a lot of these young guys.
Yes, he was.
I mean, we talk about Maddon and Dungy changing a culture, but Cooper did it. But he started at the AHL, and a lot of that was there. Where they won 28 straight games at one streak.
He developed the guys that eventually came up and played for
him. Yeah. So I don't think Cooper sometimes gets enough credit for changing the culture of the organization.
Yeah, because his culture had always been winning, wherever he was.
Because, you know, we forget about that time at Norfolk and Syracuse. Right. With Kucherov, Killorn, Johnson, right. Palat, and a lot of these guys, which is why they then promoted him up to the NHL when they decided to move on from Guy Boucher.
Right.
And he just continued that transformation in there. And you know, there's a lot to be said for that.
No question. I just think that, you know, do you give Tony Dungy credit for, and he wasn't a head coach, but and it's apples to oranges, but like, he was a hell of a defensive coordinator, had some great defenses in Minnesota. He was really good in Pittsburgh. Like, you know, you got to do it at the big league level. Mm-hmm. You've got to do it as a head coach. Cooper was a head coach, but it wasn't. It was still the AHL, you know. But I think we now know that those players that he had it. To me, you know, this is a chicken egg. Every coach comes in and says, we've got to change the culture. You know, they get their job because the team's not winning or not winning enough. You know what? It's about culture. You know what? Screw that. Winning is culture. What did John Cooper do wherever he was? He won. So he had a, you know, he was a winner. I mean, that's the culture. The damn culture is winning. And, you know, well, they got to learn how to win. Okay. No, just if you can win, the culture has changed. So he brought that winning with him because everywhere he went, he was successful. So, yeah, I do give him credit for what he's done, and it is a good point. And so many of those guys he developed that when they got to the NHL, they were prepared to play and play well. And some of them are now superstars. So, yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, the resumes just don't add up. They don't match up, right? They just don't. Now, what if Bruce Arians wins another Super Bowl? But he got Tom Brady, and he had all these players that were there before him, and does he come into the conversation?
Absolutely he does. You got two championships, You're there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's all about championships, man. And I'm sorry, the Rays haven't won a World Series. As much as I love Joe Maddon and I love Kevin Cash, I think they've both done an unbelievable job with the hand they're dealt. I don't know anyone could do any better than those two.
Particularly with the economics of baseball.
Yeah.
You don't have the salary cap like the other
sports. It's so different. Yeah. I mean, if you had a salary, can you imagine if you had a salary cap in baseball, what the Tampa Bay Rays would be?
Yeah, if you had better revenue sharing and salary caps, it would
Yeah,
be.
I mean, all the players that, you know, that they would develop that would win Cy Youngs would then go away into a big market team because they couldn't afford them. What if they'd have kept some of those guys? You know? And what if the playing field was level? Or if you lost a player, you had enough money to make a trade for a guy that had a $25 million salary. I mean, it's so different, it's not even imaginable. So I just think the sports are so, you know, out of whack that way. But, no, Cooper, to me, what Cooper has done until somebody wins too, he stands above him.
LG21 tweeted us and said, looking back, isn't it great we didn't land Erik Karlsson? Seems like a lock just a few summers ago. This team would be lucky to win one cup, much less two, with that salary on the books.
I mean, sometimes the best trades are the ones that you don't make, right? I mean, it's the ifs and buts and candies and nuts argument, but I mean, we really don't know. Maybe Karlsson would have been phenomenal, you know, in this environment, in this culture, on this team. Maybe he'd have been a mainstay, and maybe they wouldn't have needed some other defenseman that they ended up grabbing, you know? Maybe they could have used that salary cap money instead of, you know, grabbing some other people. So it's hard to say, you know, no one has a time machine. I know this. He was a hell of a player, is a hell of a player, so I don't think he would have, you know, hurt them.
I don't think he'd have been as good as, say, what Ryan McDonagh has played lately.
I don't think he could be any better.
Yeah. Where he was in his career and where he's at now, you know, you see what he's doing now in his career.
Right. But he's doing, yeah, but he wouldn't with the Lightning. But, yeah, I don't think he'd have been any better. It is kind of a blessing in disguise. I mean, that happens in pro sports, right? Mm-hmm. But, again, it's kind of hard to, boy, aren't they lucky they didn't. Maybe. I guess, yeah. But you know what? You only have the information at the time. I give him credit for going after the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the thing. They were trying to win a cup. They were trying to push to add to their talent. So all that was good, and he considered him, but, you know, whatever, just didn't happen. So, you know, you really, it's what you do, how you react to that when here are the other guys we can get, and Ryan McDonagh, and, you know, these other guys start showing up, and they all play well, and they've got two cups to show for it. So you don't regret. You obviously can't look back, but in hindsight, with their salary cap situation, yeah, that guy would have taken a big chunk of it, man. No question.
All right, we'll switch to the Rays now. And Austin, who lives in Memphis and tweeted us for the first time, is from here and listens all the time, says, seems like MLB draft picks are traded much less often than draft picks in other major sports. Is that an accurate observation? And if so, why is that?
I think the picks themselves, it depends on where they are. But, I mean, obviously, this seems somewhat simplistic. I just think there's less of a it's harder to predict what a and most of, and I'll just say it, like, and maybe this is changing, most of your best prospects are high school players. If they're drafted in the first round or high in the first round, they don't make it to college because they get too much money to sign coming out of high school. But that's a long way from the major leagues. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. It's like, how much do you value a draft pick? Where is the pick? What's your farm system like? You know, what's your major league team like? You're trying to develop your farm system. It's not a, you know, the Major League Baseball draft, I don't know what the failure rate is for that. I know it's about 50% in the NFL in the first round. I can't imagine it's that high, or, you know, that it's not higher in Major League Baseball.
Well, there's two parts to this too. The other parts, Major League Baseball players generally are years away from reaching the big leagues.
4 or 5 years generally.
So there's not as much demand. You know, it's not like I'm going to trade for this pick and I'm going to, you know, he's
not going to help me this year.
Yeah, for the most part. But two, I don't believe baseball allows trading of picks outside the compensatory picks. I think they actually do not allow that. Now, you can draft someone and then trade them at that point.
Right.
But I don't believe they allow trading picks outside the revenue. The small revenue teams get compensatory picks. I think those can be traded.
Okay.
So, like, the Rays picked, I think they picked 28th, and then they had, like, the 34th or 35th pick.
There's your answer. Yep. I wasn't aware of that, but there's your answer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's kind of like, you know, the NBA at draft night, you can't trade draft picks then, so then you draft a player and immediately trade them, and so... Mm-hmm. You know, you draft the player and he's got a hat on, but he's never going to play for that team because he was already traded, but he still wears the hat of the team
that's the weirdest thing,
isn't
it?
That's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's very
But
it's
I
very
think
weird.
It has something to do with the rules and the fiscal year, and because the season hasn't ended yet when you have the draft for the next year yet, and that's the reason the NBA does it, but it seems bizarre.
Yeah. Interesting.
Tommy asked, Rick, do you see the Rays making a trade at the trade deadline? Do you see them trying to acquire a frontline starter without giving up way too much?
Well, sign me up for that. If you can get a frontline starter without way too much, I'd take the not way too much deal any day. Yeah, we talked about this the other day. I really do think that, you know, if you're talking about, if the goal is the World Series and to win it, and why wouldn't it be, right? You got there, you got 6 games with the Dodgers, you fell short. You didn't really make a lot of moves in the offseason per se. You lost some players, Charlie Morton and Blake Snell, and, you know, you did acquire some guys. Now you brought up some of your better prospects. But if the goal is still the World Series, and if you look at this baseball team, not knowing what the status of Glasnow is going to be, and that is an absolute crapshoot. I don't care who you are with the Rays. You really don't know if you're getting the guy back, and if you do, what he's going to be or how long it would take for him to build himself up to pitch. There might not be enough time. I think that that's what they lack. I mean, love Rich Hill having an unbelievable year, 41 years old. Okay, there's one guy. He's going against everybody's ace, right, in any series we play if you're the Rays. You've won the regular season. You're in the playoffs. Now everybody's ace is going against Rich Hill. You okay with that? Well, maybe. Okay, what about the next night? Shane McClanahan. Guy's a virtual rookie, you know. He's going against everybody's number two. You good with that? Well, maybe. Okay, well, who's number three? I mean, at some point, I think if you're going to add, you have to add to try to find a rock-solid top three starter because, you know, in a 7-game series, these guys are going to pitch a couple times. So, And your ace, you may see him as many as 3 times in the same. So, yeah, I'm all for it. What is getting it for much less or not much? Or, you know, I don't know what that is. Without bankrupting your farm system? I don't know what that is. You got to give up something to make something. I mean, what I think they'll hope for is, yeah, we're going to have to part with some prospects. And we, you know, the question is, will they rent a player? Will they take a player that does not have a contract beyond this year? Will they be willing to do that? Since most of his contract depends on the player.
Depends on who the player is and their evaluation of him. I mean,
yeah,
I think the Rays, as much as anybody, you know, looks at a player and assigns a grade, a value, a dollar figure.
And they stick to it.
And, you know, if it's over it, we're not paying it. I mean, that's how you stay within a lower payroll is, you know, you've got to have your... You know, you're not doing this on gut. This is what we think this player is worth. If we can get him for this, then great. If not, we move on to the next option.
So easier said than done, right? Because all it takes is, you know, everybody wants to add a starter, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, so there's a market out there, a free, you know, a free market in terms of compensation for teams that want to trade for a guy. And if a guy's good and he's available, you don't think there's about five to seven other teams that don't want to add the same player? So, you know, again, that's why your point is the Rays are going to say, here's what we think his value is. If it exceeds it, we're out. And that's kind of how you have to approach it. But do they want to add something? Yes. Would they like it not to bankrupt their farm system? Sure. We'd sign up for that tomorrow. I just don't know that it happens. And I'm sure Breezebaugh is shaking, you know, Breezebaugh, wrong GM. I'm sure the Rays, although he's probably shaking that, I'm sure the Rays are doing the best they can to, you know, to find that guy. It just, you don't know how many conversations they have about players, and you may never know, right, how close they came to this guy or that guy. But rest assured, they're trying to find themselves some help. I mean, it'd be malpractice if you didn't. This baseball team could use another starting pitcher. Look how great their bullpen has been, for goodness sakes. You know, if you could add one more guy.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the Rays, more than anybody, I think are always looking to add. So, I think they probably burn the phones more than anybody. There may be some teams that refuse to talk to them because they tend to do very well. They are very good at player evaluation. You know, you kind of see the same teams trade with them all the time. They trade a lot with the Brewers. They trade with the Padres. I don't know if the Cardinals will ever trade with them again. But I think the Rays, more than any other team, are always looking at what they can add. And quite frankly, if they do feel they need to add a frontline starter, they have enough prospects in the system that they could deal from. I mean, their farm system is loaded. Even with calling up Vidal Brujan and Taylor Walls and Wander Franco, their farm system is still loaded. You have prospects to trade from. So they can make a move if they choose. I mean, it's much like the Lightning. The last 2 years, and Julian Breezebaugh took a lot of crap initially when he traded number one draft picks plus a prospect to get Coleman and Goodrow. Helped him net 2 Stanley Cups. Traded another number one draft pick to get David Savard this year. Helped him win a Stanley Cup. I mean, when your window's there, that's when it's time to use prospects and picks if you can, and baseball if you can't. But that's when it's time to use prospects to try to get over the hump. If you think your window's open, that's when you go for it. It's when you don't have enough players to win a World Series, that's when you start acquiring prospects and picks and bulking up that farm system. But once you're in that window, you go for it if you have a deal that makes sense. I mean, if you know you evaluate and you know Julian Breezebaugh put a price on Goodrow and Coleman and said, okay, we think those players are good enough to help us win. That price was worth it, and they went for it. If San Jose required 2 number one draft picks for Goodrow, they probably don't make the deal. You know, it's all about figuring that out. But when you're in your window, that's when it's time to stop worrying about acquiring prospects and use a prospect to help you net a winner, whether it's calling them up or trading them to get another piece.
Speaking of the Rays draft, how weird was it that in 6 picks they didn't take a pitcher? That is unprecedented.
That is for them. Look, their farm system now finally has some hitters in it. I mean, when you see guys like Vidal Brujan and Wander Franco and Josh Lowe and these guys, I mean, you know, they're for years they always just brought up pitchers. They never seemed to be able to develop hitters, and they've done a much better job recently of that. So, I think that they're in a position, their farm system's deep enough, you go in going, let's take the best available player, period. You don't have to do anything of need. I mean, right. they've got enough pieces in that where it's, we think this guy's the best available player right now. Take him. We're not trying to, we don't need to go, hey, we need pitchers, we need outfielders, we need this. It's take the best players, period.
Their first pick was a shortstop, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's almost all picks are shortstops.
Well, yeah.
Shortstops or center fielders are pretty much all your hitter or catcher.
Like I said.
Those are the fielders that you take.
If you played baseball, you played shortstop and you pitched, I'm just saying. Yes. Sorry for everybody else that didn't. Maybe first base if you were left-handed, but that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, what do we got next?
We got a Bucks question here from Cameron.
Yay.
Says, who are some of the players that you would expect to take a large leap forward this season? We've drafted well recently, and I think some guys have their eyes on a Pro Bowl caliber year.
Yeah, I think we saw those players at the end of last year do it. And this is in no particular order. First of all, I will just say, when it comes to Devin White, who was already a really good player, I think we've just started to see Devin White's abilities. And I think we saw it in the postseason. And remember, he missed the first postseason game because of the COVID protocol. So what he did in the postseason was just, I think, a glimpse of how great he can be. But his recognition and his speed is as good or better than most linebackers in the NFL right now. And he's just now coming into his own as a player in this defense. And so, and I've said this, I know it sounds ridiculous. I really believe that this guy has a chance to be for the Bucs what Ray Lewis was for the Ravens. I really do. I think he's going to be a superstar, is a superstar. The more playoffs and national TV games and everything, people will recognize that. And he plays next to a really good player. But here's the thing. You know, Lavonte David doesn't seem to be slowing down very much. But at the end of the day, this guy had the most tackles on the team. He had like 140 tackles during the regular season. He had 9 sacks, which was second on the team, only to JPP, who had 9.5. He had more sacks than Shaq Barrett. I think he had more quarterback hits than Shaq Barrett. He had the most tackles for losses on the football team. And we saw in the postseason, people rap him for his coverage. Well, okay, all I know is he sealed the game in New Orleans and he sealed the Super Bowl with a couple of interceptions. So he can get even better in that area. So, you know, while you'd say, well, Devin White was already a good player, yeah, but I think he's set to explode. The other guy that really, if you go back even as late in the season when the Bucs came off the bye and they were down 17-0 against the Falcons and Calvin Ridley was running circles around Sean Murphy Bunting, look at what Sean Murphy Bunting became as the year went on, and particularly in the postseason. The man had three or four interceptions in as many postseason games. I mean, he was just, you know, elevated to another level. And I think that if he continues that aggressiveness and that confidence, I think he can be a special player this year, along with guys like Jamal Dean, who I think is going to get better. You know, defensively, I mean, look, the same thing I said about Devin White, you could say about Vita Vea. Vita Vea needs to be healthy. He needs to stay on the field. But if you didn't see the difference in that defense when Vita Vea was in there versus when he wasn't, the Green Bay game, he played 33 snaps, had no stats, did not register a stat. I'm here to tell you, he absolutely won the game. He won the game because he occupied two blockers, and he pushed the pocket so much that they had one-on-ones outside and got 5 sacks of Aaron Rodgers. That's the strength of Vita Vea, who also plays next to Sue, and they, you know, for 2 years now they had the number one run defense. I'm talking about a lot of defensive players, right? On the offensive side, I'll just tell you, and this is contrary to what everything they've done in the offseason and everything else, the guy that they thought had the best offseason among the players coming back was Keyshawn Vaughn. Now, everybody's going to go, well, they just signed Giovanni Bernard. I mean, this guy might not even get on the field. He might not. But they still like this guy. They drafted him in the second round for a reason. He had no offseason, no training camp, played a little while in spurts, had a touchdown against the Chargers that was big in their comeback. But they really like Keyshawn Vaughn. So we'll see. I'm just basing this on what they're telling me. I think Tyler Johnson has a bright future. The problem is they got 35 receivers ahead of him. But if you go back and look at the clutch catches he made in the playoffs against New Orleans on third down, I mean, that was huge. And I think he's got more in him. So there's a lot of guys. I mean, and we're not even talking about the Scotty Millers and the, you know, the people that are going to burst on the scene there. I still think Ronald Jones has a big upside. The more you see him play,
I hope to see a lot more out of O.J. Howard, and most of that's going to be health.
Yeah, and I think that's a great one that I overlooked. And O.J. has, unfortunately, you know, the weird thing is, and I talked to him, I did a story about him in the offseason, is that he never got injured in his entire athletic career until he got to the NFL. He didn't get hurt at Alabama. He had a couple of freak ankle things, guys fall on the back of his legs in his first 2 years here. You know, one of those years I thought he didn't report back in shape quite as well. I thought, you know, they were mad at him because in the bye week it didn't look like he worked out, and he came back and immediately pulled a hamstring after the bye week and, you know, that sort of thing. But for the most part, you know, he's coming off a major injury. I mean, the Achilles injury is a 9-month injury to recover from. But if you want to talk about a guy now that has all the ability in the world and we saw a glimpse of him and Brady really starting to sync up until he got hurt in that Chargers game. I think in that game he had 3 catches for 50-something yards and a touchdown. He could absolutely, you know, tear the roof off of it. Now he's got to share the ball with Gronkowski. Brady did not see the field while OJ was still, you know, still in the lineup. So I don't know that Cameron's going to knock him out of anything. But you know, OJ Howard to me, and it's a contract year. He's playing under the 5th-year option for about $6 million. This is his year. This is his year to prove to the Bucs or the NFL that, you know, he could be a $8 to $10 million a year tight end. And I really think with Brady, who has a real affinity for him, likes him personally, I think he helped him last year as a player. And I know he's driven. I mean, the thing about OJ is you take football away from these guys for the first time, they look at the game a little different. They look at workouts different. They look at their off season different. They realize that, you know, their own football mortality, and it's scary to them. And so it won't be for a lack of training. It won't be for a lack of effort. I think you're going to see the best OJ Howard this year we've ever seen.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We'll end on a few fun questions here, and we'll start with Vince, who asked, what happened to the custodian of the Stanley Cup during the boat parade? I have a vision of him cringing in a fetal position in a dark corner, whimpering to himself. Any ideas?
I mean, I didn't see him one time near the parade, so I don't know what happens because
I saw him on some of the boats. I saw him on a boat, yeah.
All right, well, here's the thing. If he's going to let them carry the cup, short of diving after it, if it starts to slip from their fingers and protecting the cup against the ground or the concrete or whatever it hit, I don't know. He'd have to be right on top of it at all times. However, I don't know who pays him. The NHL, the Hockey Hall of Fame, I don't know who pays him. But I would just say that's a tough review. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, and what's the guy's name? You know the guy's name?
Phil Pritchard is the main. There's actually several of them. But
yeah,
Phil's
got
the
white hair, blonde hair.
Yeah.
So I say, okay, Phil.
Or someone tweeted him the other day, why is Boris Johnson holding the Stanley Cup?
But. Yeah, right, exactly. Hey, Phil, this is your annual review. Okay, so you were with the Cup all season? Yeah, okay. And things went pretty well. Lighting won again. Okay, so it didn't really have to move very far. No, okay. So so another boat parade. It survived that, right? Yeah, it was.
Yeah, the boat came through the boat parade.
Didn't sink at all. Nobody tossed it. Yeah, it was like a charm. Okay, so how is the trophy doing now? Yeah, it took a little fall. What? Well, it got flattened. Like the cup, the top part, really. The trophy got smashed. Somehow it got smashed flat. Well, what's your job? Your job is to protect the cup, you know? And again,
tried lifting 34 pounds of silver and whatever else it's made of?
If that's all I had to do,
pouring down rain and pouring.
If it's all I had to do,
he didn't.
I have one job.
He didn't drop it.
But I have one job. Really, I have one job. You know, you're okay. You're the Secret Service, and your job is the President of the United States. He got shot. How'd I do?
You're saying Phil Pritchard was supposed to dive under the cup so it didn't hit the ground. Is that what you're?
Yes.
Saying?
You got to be Rosie Grier at that point. I mean, yeah, you have to get the gun. Like, you have to be the guy that protects the cup. So all I'm saying is the cup came back smashed. That's a bad review this year.
Look, everyone came back from that parade smashed.
They were all smashed. You know what? Somebody should have used that line in the newspaper. I'll be stealing it and put it on Twitter. Yeah. They were all smashed, including the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
Nobody was not smashed. That's
right.
Really funny.
Carl asked, with the All-Star break here, who would be your starting 9 all Bay Area baseball team of all time? He mentioned Al Lopez, Dwight Gooden, Steve Garvey, Wade Boggs. He says, got to fill every position, so some positions might be tricky. 110%
right.
Well, correct, he said.
I'm going to put myself at second base since I grew up and played here.
So you weren't shortstop and pitcher. That was the problem.
No, I was shortstop and pitcher until I got to college, and then I moved to second, which, yeah, maybe not a great decision. But no, but anyway, look, he spotted us Al Lopez, can't argue. Dwight Gooden, can't argue. Steve Garvey, Wade Boggs. Now, I don't know if we're going by position here.
He wanted it by position, but I don't know. That might take a little more time and thought from us.
It might. Know. Let's think about this. We've got guys like...
Does Pete Alonso make it now? He's back-to-back home run champion.
Yeah, I don't think he's exceeded, like, say, Fred McGriff.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. That's true.
And at third base, I mean, how do you top Wade Boggs, right?
Howard Johnson
can play the outfield or shortstop, played shortstop at Clearwater High.
Played some of his best years with the Mets at third base.
You can hear the thunder and lightning rumbling outside my home. We got guys like Tino Martinez. What do you do with it? How about Sweet Lou Piniella in right field?
Well, is Piniella playing right field or is he managing?
He's not managing.
Well, who is Kevin Cash managing?
Kevin Cash may be the catcher and the manager. I'm not sure. Or Bobby Wilson may be the catcher. I don't know. But Kevin Cash is on this baseball team. He may manage over Sweet Lou. Even though people would argue, is Sweet Lou in the Hall of Fame as a manager? He's not, right?
I'm not sure. What about Tony La Russa?
Yeah. Got to consider him. Absolutely got to consider him. There's just so many great players from Tampa Bay over the years. It really is incredible.
Some current players, Lance McCullers.
McCullers is great. I think he's curving. Denard Span was a really good player here for years and years. Yeah.
You count guys like Matt Joyce. I mean, he's from Lakeland. That means Tampa area.
Matt Joyce is at Bay Area, I think.
I don't know if he'd be in the greatest, but, I mean, solid player.
Let me see if there's a name that we haven't come up with yet. Let me think. We mentioned Gooden, right? So, and we mentioned Cash and Piniella. Oh, you know what? There's a couple more. How about Gary Sheffield? Hello?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Gary Sheffield is a borderline Hall of Famer right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
What about, I said Tino Martinez. We got a lot of first basemen. That's the problem. How about, here's one. There's two more. Derek Bell, guy hit 134 home runs in his career. How about Luis Gonzalez, who had 2,500 hits? Luis Gonzalez was a really good player for a long time. World Series title.
You know? Do hear that thunder and lightning outside your door.
Yeah, I know. It's in my backyard here as I do it from the spacious Lutz abode. So this is a great question. I don't think we can do it by – what about a guy like Mike Hampton? He's from Brooksville. He's a good reliever.
No.
How about Chris Sale
from
Lakeland? If we're going to expand it.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? That's a good one. Tyler Clippard, remember him? He was a reliever. Mm-hmm. He played here as well. Who else we got? Jody Reed played a little bit. Carl Everett. Carl Everett used to live across the street from us. Pretty good player. I'm telling you, the Tampa, no shortage of major league talent. I mean, it really is impressive. I think we hit most of them. I don't know that we could do it by position. Then we'd have to make decisions on first baseman and third baseman, stuff like that. I'll give it to Wade Boggs, though. I don't think you're going to top that. 3,000 hits.
Dave Magadan.
Dave Magadan's a great one. University of Alabama's own. It's a really good one.
I'm just going through some lists here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see. Like, is there somebody we forgot? We don't want to insult anybody.
Yeah, no. I mean, there's so many. And we're kind of doing this on the spot, too.
Right. Yeah, we didn't prepare. We did not like, write a list down or anything like that. It's just kind of... I like Garvey. There's some good old school guys like Garvey's going.
Well, all right, we'll end on this.
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah, we'll end on this. Paul asked, my question isn't about sports in particular, but about both of us. Well, I know there is no such thing as a typical day in your careers. I'd like to know what a day in the life has been for each of you. I know Rick has to get over to $1, or is it Zoom now, to do interviews, right on deadline, stay up late to do this podcast. I'm producing Lightning Lunch, Bolts Radio podcast, as well as this one. Didn't even talk about family responsibilities for either of you. So what's a typical day like? When do you get up? What do you do? And when do you finally get to bed?
Well, as Tom Cruise said in Jerry Maguire, it is a pride-swallowing siege that I will never tell you about. No. it's, look, it's, and I, I mean, I don't know who sleeps less, me or you, but it's a contest, right? I can get up at 6 a.m., scanning the globe like Jim McKay in Wide World of Sports for anything that's happened to Tom Brady, which is virtually every day. And I can start blogging stuff because, you know, Brady's done this or they said this about this player. And so the social media has changed my job dramatically. Like, we are constantly, if you know, somebody eats pepperoni, we get indigestion. So we're constantly trying to, not just the news we produce, but maybe someone's done an interview and said something somewhere. So we're constantly doing that. So for me, it starts early. Of course, we try to plan stories during the regular season based on who the opponent is and who's played well the last week and so on and so forth, following injuries, all that stuff, all in the news. But, you know, and it's different schedule in training camp than it is in the regular season in terms of workouts. Typically, things get started at One Buck Place around 11 o'clock or, you know, whatever they call it now, the Advent Health Center. And, you know, I have already talked to my editors. I have planned some stories that I think are going to happen. You know, there's usually back in the day, there would be an open locker room around noon. We would get maybe a quarterback or the coordinators before that, like at 11:25. We'd speak to both of them. We'd go in for about 45 minutes to the open locker room. We would come out. We'd write whatever news there was in this little intermittent period between 12:45 and 1:15 when they went out to practice. Then we would go out to practice for a half hour. We would see who was practicing, who wasn't. We'd come back in. We'd blog that. Then practice would end. We'd write our stories for the day. We'd continue to write in the period that they were finishing practice. Then the coach comes in, usually about 3:30, does his spiel, so we interview him. Then we'll blog whatever we have to blog after that, finish our stories. And this can go on usually to about 6 or 7 at night. For me and you, most of our podcasts are done after 9:30 for the most part. We do some during the day once in a while, like this one.
Yeah, this one we're doing before the All-Star game, so that's why we're not talking about that.
Right, even though... Man, how great was Otani? Was that unbelievable? He was phenomenal.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He's Babe Ruth. He's Ruthian. But anyway, we would you know, I would do the podcast after 9 o'clock. You know, in the case of like on Mondays, Tom Brady, for example, he has a radio spot on Westwood One with Jim Gray. I'll have to listen to that. I have to blog that at 7 o'clock. On Tuesdays, I might do a TV hit with Bay News 9. This is the short way of saying that this goes on, you know, 5 days a week. The only days I have off during the regular season is a home Saturday if all my stuff is done for the weekend. And if it's a road game, I'm on a plane on Saturday and working Sunday and then starting all over again. So, yeah, go back to the Tom Cruise line. But that's pretty much I work all the time. And I get to bed late and I get up very early, so sleep is a problem. Not like when I did radio as well, but you know, we both keep, and you keep incredibly long hours because you're at the game sometimes and then come home and do this podcast even later than that, especially when the Lightning are in the playoffs.
Yeah, a lot of those podcasts I was still doing from Amalie Arena after we'd finished post game coverage, which is usually an hour after the game, and then we would hop on and do the podcast, so I wouldn't get home till 1:30
in the morning. Yeah,
there's no typical day for me. I mean, I have the things we do this podcast 5 days a week.
Right.
There's a Lightning show that airs at noon on their digital channel called Lightning Power Play. Produce that every day. Some days we're live. Some days we tape it early in the morning. Just depends on the schedule. Dave Michigan and Greg Linnelli host that show. I do Rays games. I do Lightning games. This year was crazy because I had to do every road Lightning games too, because announcers didn't travel this year.
That's right.
Which also meant I did some more Rays games as well because Dave and Andy weren't traveling for a while. They're now on the road. The Raptors were here too, and I did things with them for games. So, for instance, there was a stretch April 1st. There was a stretch of 41 games in 43 days.
That's so stupid.
In addition to everything else I do outside. And I do a lot of other – I do some other – produce some other podcasts and some websites. And I help with the USF broadcasts for radio, as well as doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff with the Lightning radio stuff. And so there's no typical day. I mean, you know, We generally do this show after 9:30 at night. If we're not doing it during the day, because I try to spend the evening with my kids if I'm home. You do the same thing.
Yep.
So it's you know, my kids are a little younger. They go to bed. Usually we try to get by 8:30, but summertime it's by 9. So then you know,
we'll
take
also
after that.
It allows us to have the day of sports sort of behind us, or most of it, unless there's a live event. And if, like I said, if it's a playoff game or a big Rays game, we may wait until that's over, and then it becomes 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then you're up at 6. You know, we both have kids that have to get up and go to school. So,
but
yeah,
if I'm in bed before midnight, it's very rare.
Oh, extremely.
And we're up at between 6 and 7 with kids. And usually it's more like 1 or 2 till I'm in bed. But
yeah. And we're giddy when we do something during the afternoon, and we have
like this podcast. We get the night off from work part. We'll probably be watching the All-Star game, but
oh, absolutely. But as soon as you say that, then like news strike. This is the other thing. This is if nothing happens, right? Like what we've just told you is if nothing happens. Now, of course, we all know things happen, right? The world happens, and if there's breaking news, if there's something that's unexpected, which is all the time, then you're adding more hours to it. And I have been known, because I have weekend deadlines that are like, I don't know, Thursday at
last week,
10 a.m. Yeah. Right. With print, especially. So I will very often I'll get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning, and I will write, you know, stuff that's weekenders, what we call weekenders in the business, stuff for Sunday, whatever, that will hold, that we know that you know, whatever the story is not going to change barring some kind of weird injury. And all that is done even sooner. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then during the regular season, I also do a radio show at 4 o'clock on Fridays. We tape that Sunday show with WDAE.
Mm-hmm. The Insiders.
The Insiders, yeah. And hopefully that's back for another season. Still waiting on the contract, John Mamola, if you're listening. It can be.
Well, there's been many times where, like in the afternoon, like we're doing now, we're taping a podcast and news breaks, and it's like, okay, we'll just come back tonight at 9 or 9:30. We'll finish it up then.
Right.
Or you know, there's times we have to stop and adjust.
Yep, no doubt. So you got the two hardest working people in the business for you right here. I mean, we're both grinders, and that's why we're able to do this. But it's a great question, and look, again, we're in the toy department, right? We do sports. Yes, it. I've always said this: you can cover sports, you can cover anything, because sometimes you're a cops writer, sometimes you're a business writer, sometimes you're a sports writer. Sometimes it's about tragedies and people. But regardless, you know, as they would say, and I can say this because I used to do it, I'm not digging ditches for a living. And I used to dig ditches or trenches. At the Florida Power at that time, it was called Florida Progress, to put in underground cables. So I know what that's like, and I'm happy I'm not doing that. So don't feel sorry for me. I got the greatest job in the world, and I love it, and I know you do too. So, it's a lot of work, but we're happy to do it. And we're glad that you listen to this podcast, because that makes it all the worthwhile for us. We know there's a lot of people enjoy it. And
we love the questions too. I mean, the mailbags
fantastic.
Are one of our favorite shows. We get a lot of feedback from listeners on it.
Yeah,
but it's also one of our favorites because it makes us think. It's different questions, and we love it.
We love the participation. And if there's stuff, like I had somebody say the other day, Rick, you have all these relationships. Can you get more people on the podcast? Yeah, that's certainly something we would do. You know, and I was thinking about that the other day. I did a story on Monty Kiffin, and I'll be doing more stories on him. But you know, in within a few days, I talked to Ronnie Barber, I talked to Tony Dungy, I talked to Warren Sapp. I'm going to talk to Simeon Wright. So,
but we got to get you set up so that you can record it and not have you typing at the same time on it.
Well, there's that. And and also if we can make it like a recording that's not on my phone.
That's what I mean.
You know,
that's what I'm saying. We need to set you up because you're not the most technically savvy person. So,
well, that's not fair.
I'm not saying you're far from the worst. I'm just saying you're not
I failed at any particular assignment here?
No. Okay. I'm not.
Throw it at me, baby.
Look,
tell
I'm a very technically savvy person. So most people compared to me are not. So,
but that's your job. I mean, you know, would you like to write my story tomorrow? It's 50 inches. Go ahead. I'm just saying, like, I am.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Let's put it this way. In my business, there are a lot less technically savvy people.
Oh, no. I absolutely agree. Agree.
So, yeah, if you give me, we'll discuss this later, but if we could find a way for me to do those interviews, And I know it's not that hard, right? Where people can call me.
It takes some equipment. It takes some equipment.
Most of it's on the phone anyway. But like, if they can call me and we can have better quality sound, we would put it on the podcast. The fact of the matter is, the sound I have is basically a guy on a telephone through my iPad.
Yeah, it's a speakerphone, and you're typing, and
yeah, and I even when I try not to type, I'm not sure it's great. You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same quality that we have now. So we'll work that out. But yeah, we absolutely can go for that. And we do have guests throughout the year, especially, you know, during football season when we have more access to players and things.
If there's other stuff you like, let us know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if there's stuff you don't like, let us know in particular. And we'll stop doing that if enough of you don't like it. I hope it's not mailbags, though, because we love mailbags. I think they're great.
Yes.
So tomorrow we're going to have Tom Jones is going to join us maybe for a couple shows. We'll see. But, you know, longtime columnist, the Tampa Bay Times, my former radio partner, of course.
And today is the only day of the year there's no sporting events going on, essentially, or none of the major sports?
This is it. This is the dead day, although Monty Kiffin will be introduced.
Yeah, we'll have that, yes.
And we'll have his sound, and he's always a character. 81 years young. It's amazing. How long he coached, how successful he was, and I'm happy for him. You know, they surprised him a year ago on his 80th birthday with the election to the Ring of Honor, but with all that happened and no fans and everything, they pushed back a year. So he's had to wait a year for this to actually transpire, and it's going to happen on the second regular season game. I think it's September 19th against the Atlanta Falcons at Raymond James. They open, of course, with the Cowboys. Then 10 days later, he'll go into the Ring of Honor at halftime, first assistant coach to ever do that here in Tampa Bay, only the 14th name in the Ring of Honor, which is really something and well-deserved. And you'll enjoy the story in the Tampa Bay Times talking to all those guys. Monty was not afraid to get on superstars. I mean, he crawled up everybody's backside, and they appreciated it. And for as much talent as he had, they will all say to you they might not have been the players they were without Kiffin, which is really interesting. So look forward to that in Tampa Bay Times. In the meantime, enjoy your day. Again, I'll be at One Buck Place with Monty. We got no sports, right? But Tom Jones will be with us to talk on the podcast. So, yeah, keep it right here on Sports Day Tampa Bay. For Steve Burstick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.